Sanders, do you want to respond?
You know, I get a little bit tired, I must say. Are people defending a system which is dysfunctional, which is cruel? 87 million uninsured, 30,000 people dying every single year, 500,000 people going bankrupt. For what reason? They came down with cancer. I will tell you what the issue is here. The issue is whether the Democratic Party has the guts to stand up to the healthcare industry, which made $100 billion in profit, whether we have the guts to stand up to the corrupt, price-fixing pharmaceutical industry, which is charging us the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs. And if we don't have the guts to do that, if all we can do is take their money, we should be ashamed of ourselves.
Thank you.
It is Friday, October 18th. Happy October, all you Libras out there. Welcome to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. This is Kev Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Each week I talk to our Capitol muckraker in chief, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. On today's show, it was Democratic debate night last Tuesday, all. And Sean and I will give you our big takeaways from the night. I gotta say, Mehdi Hasan of The Intercept says that basically there should be only two front runners right now, Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. We'll get into that. Bernie Sanders is getting some big endorsements this week. Oh, yes. We've got Ilhan Omar, and today, was it today? Tomorrow. Tomorrow, AOC is expected to give her big announcement endorsement to Bernie at a big rally in New York. Trump pulls the rug out from under the Kurds in northeastern Syria, which led almost immediately to over 100,000 Kurdish fighters and families having to flee from advancing Turkish forces. No worries, though, because Mike Pence then headed to Turkey to basically work an agreement in reverse and give Erdogan, everything that he wanted, signing off on Turkish slaughter of the Kurds. It's always good. Mick Mulvaney earns his new nickname, Quid Pro Quo. Go, Mick, go. And Trump says, fuck you, we're going to duel, man. We're going to duel. That's right, the G7 will be at Trump's club. And rest in peace to Elijah Cummings. Seriously, amazing. And you want to know how to go out like a boss? I'll tell you what, on your deathbed, about signing two subpoenas, getting documents related to the detention of immigrant children and refugees. What are you going to do? Ooh, man. In today's local focus, it's Mark Sanford. Yeah, remember Mark Sanford? Yeah, that Mark Sanford. You got it. Yeah, the former South Carolina governor and most famous for telling everyone he was hiking the Appalachian Trail when he was kind of out there. He was going out on the lam to spend time, you know, a little kind of unka-unka with his Argentinian mistress. Oh, man. Yes, well, he was in town in Harrisburg to kick off his long-shot primary campaign against Donald Trump. He's in Philadelphia and Harrisburg on Wednesday. Oh, the crowds would just blow the top off you, man. Unbelievable. Looks like he hasn't flown much, though, too, as well, because he's still working on kind of like remove the shoes before you go through the metal detector kind of thing. So, thousands of UAW and Mack truck workers went on strike in the Mid-Atlantic region this week. And that comes at the same time as that, there is a tentative agreement on the kind of the big, huge GM UAW strike kind of nationwide. But anyways, that includes hundreds of workers, this Mack truck worker strike, in the McCungee and Middletown assembly plants. So look out that. And just yesterday, right, the Chicago teachers went on strike too. I mean, this is the kind of thing that would be like, you know, giving progressives like, you know, happy thoughts, right, and front page news that this kind of like militant worker action, if it weren't for the kind of like bloviating solar winds coming out of Washington, D.C. with all this crazy stuff. The Pennsylvania Capital Star reports on how to fix that the fix is in for Lebanon County District Attorney David Arnold to replace Mike Fulmer in the Pennsylvania Senate. Sorry, Matt. Busy. You little bald-headed Commonwealth mofo. Matt Brulé. A little Frenchy. And Chancellor Greenstein came to Kutztown, right, from Posse. Chancellor Greenstein came to Kutztown and says, well, you know, all us union members, you know, ones that are raising all the... We were just bad kids, and we got to learn to get along. He also announced a part of a plan for Apache to dramatically consolidate its services, which offers some interesting opportunities for organizing, in my opinion. Today's last call, big space news. This morning, two women NASA astronauts made history. Christina Koch and Jessica Meir ventured outside the International Space Station for the first all-female spacewalk in history. Space.com reported the spacewalking duo who trained together in the same astronaut class are not just colleagues, they're best friends too. It's kind of like, you know, this is like how you make a movie in like in advance. Pretty crazy. NASA also unveiled new spacesuits for the Artemis era of space exploration. Yes, we get red, white, and blue suits for the lunar surface and orange spacesuits for their spaceships, right? In particular, they unveiled the spacesuits that will be worn by the first woman on the moon. And that's actually important because, if you recall, there was supposed to be an all-women spacewalk earlier this year, but it got canceled in part because they didn't have enough spacesuits that would fit women. So that was just kind of interesting that they put that out in front there. And not to be outdone, on Wednesday, Virgin Galactic unveiled their new spacesuits designed by, yes, Under Armour. Welcome to space leisure, everybody. And that will be worn by passengers on Virgin's Edge of Space flights. And this week, Free Will has got two great-looking releases. They got a cranberry wheat, and they've got one that is actually their first collaboration with Dewclaw Brewing and Is a Beer Carb. It's called Universally United, as Sean fell off his chair. It's called Universally United, and that will be available in both locations in four-pack cans on Saturday, October 19th. October 19th, that rings a bell. All right, yes. Well, if you tune in to the Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern, you can stream the show live at freespeech.org. You can also tune in to the Dish Network, DirecTV, or through the Free Speech TV app on Roku. Yep, but make sure you download the Rick Smith Show daily podcast on iTunes, Podbean, or wherever you get your podcast. And if we want a progressive future, we need a progressive media. You got to build the fight for 2020. You can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. That's right. The best way to keep the media in the movement in the media, is to become a member for as little as $5 a month. It's like a beer a month, everybody. You can do it by going to patreon.com/rcpress today. Well, hey, Sean, looks like we were spared the bomb cyclone, and now here we are going into yet another weekend after an insane week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, where do we start off?
I don't know. Well, why don't we get the debates out of the way? We'll kind of go there before we kind of drill down in particular. So, and we've got a bunch of stuff on this. So, did you watch the debates?
I only watched the first hour.
The first hour.
And then afterwards, I was just like, fuck this, I'm out of here. Like I couldn't deal with it anymore after that. When I saw it was going to 11 o'clock, I was like, all right, this is just ridiculous.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, I was actually looking forward to it. I was actually really looking forward to watching the full, 3+ hours of the debate. But my daughter couldn't sleep, so she came down, and so she wanted me to go upstairs with her, so I ended up going upstairs with her. And then, of course, I fell asleep, too, when I was one up there. So so I didn't sleep. So I've been playing catch-up for the rest of the week on the debate. I did see about the first half. So if you had to kind of say at least some of the takeaways that you see, either what you saw on Tuesday night or what you kind of have been looking at in the aftermath, what would you give as your highlights?
So my first hot take is that Joe Biden fucking hates Liz Warren.
Oh, do you think? Do you think?
I mean, that reaction from Biden was like, first of all, yeah, it's mansplaining. I mean, he started screaming, pretty much like screamed at her.
I got you votes.
I think that's going to be a defining moment of his downfall. I mean, like, I feel like, you know, Sam Sears said this week that Warren and Sanders have just kind of let Biden falter on his own without attacking him.
Yep, that was smart.
And you know, you saw Biden, you know, falter a couple of times this week at the debate. First one, like right off the bat with his question about his son, Hunter Biden. I mean, he had the opportunity to turn it around. Yeah, it is nepotism. Like, let's just put it there, 100% nepotism.
But look, this is like,
this is also a freebie for Biden to say, yeah, and what about Trump's kids? What about Ivanka Trump making $80 million a year off of China trade in like fucking copyrights? Or what about like the millions of dollars the Kushners are involved with? What's happening with Doral, like the annulments clause, like these people are enriching themselves off of the office of the president.
Right.
And Trump, Biden had a fucking golden opportunity to do that, but he was slipping there towards when the sun was going down.
Well, it is stressful to answer the most obvious question that's going to be put to you for the evening. I mean that's a hard thing.
It was a fucking volleyball of a question, and he swung and missed.
Well, and the thing is, look, we know, like, you know, going into that, look, the press would love that, like, well, especially CNN, right? They you know, to make it about personalities and not substance, about, you know, this kind of, and about the scandals of personalities is kind of where they're going to go. You know, they're going to do this stuff. And frankly, he actually has a good answer to that, right? Not what he actually said, but I mean, it would be easy to say. It's like, look, he's like, my son was, yes, he was working there, right? I said, but if you look at what my actions were, right? Number one, my actions were actually, there was a guy who was not prosecuting corruption in that, and we kind of pushed to get rid of him, get someone in there that would prosecute corruption, right? Look, my record is clear on that in terms of what my entanglements were. However, we shouldn't be having this. But what's interesting is that we're talking about like this non-issue about what's happening with my son when Ivanka Trump, everything you just said, right? I mean, there's your pivot point, and then it becomes then his focus on Trump, which is supposed to be his sweet spot, right? But, I mean, he's got like, I can't get these consultants out of my ears, right? Unless Warren's standing next to me, and it's not making me feel very comfortable.
and then that part, the second part with Liz Warren.
Holy shit.
That freak out. I actually didn't see that.
Yeah, I saw it live.
Like, 4 or 5 o'clock the next day. Yeah. Like, I didn't realize it happened.
Yeah.
And my first reaction was that it's cringeworthy. Like, just, I mean, like,
absolutely.
And, like, and, you know, it goes back to Scott Wagner calling 18-year-old woman young and naive. It goes back to all the shit Trump was doing with Clinton on the debate stage by standing over her shoulder. I mean, like, yeah, this is just a continuation of how, you know, like, this is politics is pretty much driven by men and how he feels entitled.
That's exactly what it is. And the fact is this is what Sam Cedar was saying, right, in the Majority Report, in terms of breaking down that exchange too as well, about basically going right in and saying, look, and look, Liz Warren knew that he was freaking lying about that. Right. Anybody who was part of that discussion at the time and trying to get the Consumer Protection Agency kind of approved knows that Biden was nowhere to be found. Right. That he voted for it, but he wasn't on the floor kind of like, you know, grabbing someone by the collar and rustling them up and things like this. No. And a matter of fact, and what the fair read of it is that there may have been some people on Biden's staff that kind of are much more aligned with Elizabeth Warren than they were with kind of Joe Biden's kind of middling kind of perspective on things, that they may have actually been helpful, but Biden did not kind of lean in there. And Obama had to be convinced, right, by Warren in many cases, by Warren and others of her supporters to actually go big on this.
And Sanders.
Right, yeah, and Sanders, right? Sanders was in there kind of like championed the cause there too as well in support of her, right? And then Obama had to convince. And then to Obama's credit, once he got on board, he went out and fought for it, right? He did that, but not Biden. And so this is like Biden. Not only is it Biden kind of lying about being on the floor, kind of gathering
votes. And Sanders
votes,
knew it was a fucking lie.
Oh, yeah. You see, he said, oh, Joe, I don't know why you're saying that, Joe. Joe, you were getting coffee.
Don't go down there. Don't do it.
Joe, why don't you just go polish your teeth and shut the fuck up.
You know, but that's really it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so you could see the expressions on the face, and I'm so glad that we have video of, like, Biden going after, kind of responding to Warren and Bernie Sanders on the other side. That was the kind of the live shot from CNN. You can see Sanders is kind of looking at Biden knowing, like, this is not true. And
don't
Warren,
do it, man.
Yeah, and yeah, exactly. She's going to rip you apart, Joe.
I'm telling you, this is
don't
man
poke the bear, Joe. Like, yeah, he's like, you know, it's like, look, I fundamentally then agree with Liz on this one, but man, I hate seeing a man get taken apart.
But like when she said, I thank President Obama.
Yep. She said it so slow.
You heard the fucking air get sucked out of the room at that. Like, oh, damn. She just, like, clapped back real hard.
And then she even ends that with, like, and there were people that Obama had to fight in his own administration to put it back, right? And you hear, like, these rumblings in the crowd being like, oh. And Sanders is kind of like, I'm getting really uncomfortable.
And then when he did that, like, you did a damn good job at your job.
Oh, that was like, she's like, thank you.
And people were like, ooh, when she like said the thank you, like that was a very terse thank you. It wasn't like a.
Yeah, I'll tell you.
More restraint than me.
Well, that's the thing, right? Is that if you say, if you want to, you know, because everyone's worried about the character thing and everything like that. If you saw Elizabeth Warren in that exchange, right, where someone is going after her in the most unaccountable, right, and like condescending sexist ways. I mean, and like going right and saying and telling outright lies, right? And she just like you could see on her face that everything tensed up and she was freaking pissed, right? But she didn't miss a beat,
yeah.
Right, and no. Keeping her composure. That was amazing.
I know. I feel like that. I feel like that exchange will catapult Liz Warren further up in the polls, and this is just a mile marker in Joe Biden's decline.
Yep,
in the polls, like this is just another mile marker on the road. Like this is he's slipping. It's apparent, and I mean, like I don't know how you come out of that thinking that Biden looked good in that, looked respectful in any way, and I mean, like everyone knows the Liz Warren push for that. And it's like, yeah,
the fact that he tried to take credit for her accomplishment, yeah. And like, yeah. Which was very clearly her accomplishment. I mean, there was no
it's been her accomplishment since it was enacted in 2010.
And not like, only that, like let's remember this: is that she pushed so hard and cared so much about getting that organization put together. Right. And get it actually established that what she had to give away. Right. Is that she was not going to be the person who headed it, right? And that was the shittiness of Obama, right? Is that basically saying that, okay, the person who built us from the ground up, who laid all this and fought for this, no, we're not going to give it to you because it's going to ruffle the feathers of too many people in the center.
Republicans.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the shit that Obama pulled as part of that. But Warren, right, did she then go home and cry about it? No, she pushed extra hard to get it done, and now she's freaking look what she's been doing since then, and she's never let up on her anti-corruption and kind of exposing this kind of like injustice about corporate malfeasance. So it's like, I mean, come on, that's her record, and to kind of try to step in there, just like Biden has been riding the coattails of Obama, to try to sit there and try to take credit for her accomplishments on top of that, or saying that basically she wouldn't have been anything without him. That's really what he was saying. Fuck him, man. I mean, that was
So I guess we can move on to,
well, let me say this about this. This is the one thing and I've mentioned this before on the podcast, and this is just something that's been very, very frustrating to me. Cause I want to talk about Bernie in a second, but I want to kind of talk about this, about Warren, is that this is the second time in a row, that she has kind of given what I would say is a not very good answer to the questions about will you raise taxes to pay for Medicare for all, right? And this is what bugs me about it, is like I believe she has exactly the right frame, right? Her frame is that, look, by asking the questions solely about taxes outside of any other context, you're missing the point. The point is that
costs will go down, right?
And she keeps on coming back. She said total costs will go down. But even though I think she's technically correct about that, or not even technically, she is correct about that. The problem with it is that it sounds like she's evading the answer.
Or all she has to do is like, yes, taxes will pay for it and costs will go down.
Well,
like, and not even say like we're going to raise taxes. Like, taxes will pay for this,
right?
And the costs will go down,
right? Well, like, go ahead. Sorry.
And you will be paying less right now as
right,
like for your care.
In my series, like hashtag free political consulting, right? this is how I think you answer that question if you're Elizabeth Warren. Like Bernie is, he's got, I mean, he was clear, right? I mean, a matter of fact, he was asked a similar question. He was like, yes, taxes will go up, right? Especially on the people at the top, right? You might find that your taxes will increase a little bit, but overall, you're no longer paying co-pays. You're no longer paying out-of-pocket expenses. You're no longer doing this kind of stuff. So overall, you pay less, right? I mean, Bernie's clear about this stuff, right? But for whatever reason, whatever, Elizabeth Warren, her camp, they're deciding that they don't want to be as clear about that. So what's your alternative? In my view, from her perspective, is I think she should – this is what you do. Is you start by going after the media, and then you make your turn. Like, you go like this. You say – let me say, will you raise taxes? You turn, you say, you know what? You know, I don't understand why the media wants to focus on taxes, right, and forget the entire context. No, never mind. I do know why the media does this, because Republicans have driven the entire debate and the media has fallen circus to get us focused on the fear of taxes, because you guys know that fear sells. I said, but I'll tell you what Americans know is that when they're paying medical expenses, right, most of their costs are coming out of pocket and their premiums are through the roof. So if you want to talk about the total cost, right, of that people are paying, you want to reduce that overall cost. Taxes are one component of that, right? And so overall, you take the taxes and out of pocket expenses, and then guess what? You increase taxes slightly, but then you eliminate copays, you eliminate out of pocket expenses, you eliminate kind of the ability to put caps on benefits, right? And overall, you're paying significantly less. So if right now, if I'm paying a total of say, for example, $500 in out-of-pocket expenses, right? And then I come in here and I say, and I'm paying $100 in taxes, and I tell you that your taxes are going to go up to $200, right? But you're going to eliminate the $500 in taxes and in expenses, and you end up paying $200. Guess what? You win, right? I mean, I don't understand why that's not the avenue that they're taking. And instead, I worry about that, because I think she and Sanders, they both have really good shots at getting this nomination. And I think it's really important that that they don't let people like Pete Buttigieg come in and kind of steal the show and sound like he's the real deal.
Right. I think it's pretty apparent that he's a fucking fake.
Look, I don't know. There are people, like, I talk to people who are outside political circles, right? And they love the guy. Right. And I'm not talking to everybody, but I'm saying there are a substantive group of people out there that he is extraordinarily comforting. Right. He's the comfort candidate. He's moving into the comfort lane that Biden was supposed to occupy.
Yeah. Well, I think that's just not going to happen.
Well, I hope so. Right.
You know what I really think is going to solve all of our problems?
Do tell.
Removing Donald Trump from Twitter.
Oh, totally. Totally. I don't know why somebody, frankly, Sean, I don't know why somebody didn't think of it sooner.
Yeah. No, I mean, instead of like breaking up the tech giants, I think we should just remove Donald Trump from Twitter.
That's right. There you go. Well, you know, that's that shows you once again.
And you saw like the fucking look on Liz Warren's face when she said that.
She practically swallowed a laugh. Right. She's like, because she's like waiting. Right. Again, this is where Cedar was really good. And it was like, you could see she's sitting there like, oh, shit. Right. They're talking about kind of like making the tech giants pay and kind of antitrust stuff and stuff. And she's like, OK, she found something in this plan that she's going to come after me on this. I don't know what it's going to be. What's it going to be? And like, Donald Trump's still on Twitter and he's in violation of the user agreement. Right. I don't know about you, but that is injustice. Right?
That is unacceptable, and we must hold him accountable.
And you haven't joined me in doing that. Like, a little bit more, like, really? That's where we're going with this? I'm talking about people who are fundamentally altering the kind of, like, our mindscapes and potentially the future of all Democratic elections, and you want to talk about his Twitter account. Okay. Sure. But
she,
you know,
she is filling in that Marianne Williamson lane very well.
No. Because Marianne Williamson has got, at least she, Marianne Williamson has clarity.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And I think, no, look.
It's amazing. We were talking about this earlier. Like,
yeah.
Imagine all the people who fucking put their lives on, yep, like on hold and just quit jobs and left careers to work in Kamala Harris's administration.
And now they're freaking pissed. And now they're pissed. Right. And I really think, I think that's part of what, look, I think I've said this before on the show, is I think that's part of what's, what happened to Kamala Harris, is that she looked like she was going to be at least one of the final contenders, like at the beginning of her campaign. Her campaign launch was one of the best I've ever seen. It was fantastic. Right. I mean, and she looked like she was going to be a strong candidate, and it was going to bring in both progressives. Right. Was going to kind of solidify kind of like African-American vote. Right. Was going to be like the centrist. Right. We're going to find her right in their lane, and that she was going to be a contending candidate. And so all these people were just like, sorry, Liz Warren, nah, I'll take a pass. I'm going to go work with Kamala because she's got a chance.
Cling. But you also, like, but okay, so if you were listening to like Pod Save America, like back when Liz Warren was announcing and everything.
Who the hell listens to that?
Yeah, I know. But no, I mean, yeah, like, they were making the point that, like, Liz Warren was hiring all of the Obama talent from 2008 and 2000, like, and these were the Obama people, like, yep, yeah, you're like, they were saying, like, no, they're like hiring the people that got Obama elected, like, and we know these people and they're very well qualified to run, yep, a campaign more, yep, than like, and they were saying at the time, like, Liz Warren's getting the best talent out there, period.
Yeah,
like within Democratic circles, like, I think that, you know, Sanders' campaign is a really well-built machine and there's a lot of really good talent there and who are movement builders,
right?
But, like, when we're talking about people who are campaigners within the Democratic landscape, like, Harris, or no, Warren gobbled up all pretty much, like, the top talent there was.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, what you're seeing, and I think this is also, I mean, Mehdi Hasan, when he was talking about the interview, you know, you had sent me that interview to take a look at from Democracy Now!, and I think you're right. I think he was on fire in that interview. And Kate Aronoff was on there, too, as well, talking about how there wasn't one thing about climate change the entire debate. And we go on and on about this, but it's like the – I lost my train of thought. But the thing is about
– But there's only two – legitimate candidates.
Right, two legitimate candidates right there. And the thing is that you see the two models of the campaigning. Now, that doesn't mean they're necessarily going to get this nomination. I think it's increasingly likely that one of them will. But what you're also seeing is part of the contrast. Part of that is the same contrast which is causing tensions on the kind of like the progressive left about who to back in this. But like Warren is basically, you know, she is you're saying capturing the Obama talent, right? And by Obama talent, we're not talking here about, like, you know, these kind of like Wall Street insider traders, right? The Obama campaigners, right, and the strategists, they were some of the best strategists that were out there when they're thinking about kind of like long picture.
And we're not talking about like Plouffe and right, stuff like that. We're
no, not those people.
Yeah.
We're talking about the people that have not made it into the major spotlights, right? That but are
people's names you haven't heard yet.
Exactly. So that's who Sean's talking about, saying, you know, Elizabeth Warren was gathering up those. So and you see and then she's been slowly building out into a kind of a grassroots campaign. Bernie Sanders has worked the other way, right? I mean, he's built like one of the strongest organizations I've ever seen from the ground up. And his key organizers are those movement builders. And they're the same kind of stuff. They're not the kind of people that you're going to know their names and the big, these flashy names that make out in their public, but they're the ones who have cut their teeth in kind of movement building, right? And the real question for me going forward is how do these two groups come together? Right. And so this is one of the reasons why I was really I've been going back and forth on these two big the three actually big endorsements that some that have already happened and some that are expected for a little bit later in the week. So Ilhan Omar came out earlier in this week to basically come out and say that she supports Bernie Sanders. She released a video and talked about how important his movement and his campaign was to widening the space for participation. That's a huge get. And then at the same time, and Bernie was able to announce this, right? This came out during the debate that AOC is going to be with him in, I guess, in New York this weekend for a big announcement that she's expected to endorse him to as well. And my understanding is also Rashida Tlaib is on that same train, if she has not already. So you got three members of the squad who are kind of going to be backing Sanders. And my initial thought was like, oh, shit. Right. This is basically going to bring people into the Sanders camp. And now they're going to start going, say, after Warren. Right. And but the more I think about this, the more important it is, because here's what I'm thinking is that it's not going to be an alienation of Elizabeth Warren, because what's going to actually happen is that I think what Elizabeth Warren is going to be smart enough to know that that's part of the base that she needs. Right. So she is not going to go and kind of now alienate them. And her people are going to be very cautious about that and wanted to continue the kind of tag teaming with Bernie in these debates and in campaigning. I think it's going to be really important. Then also what happens if, say, for example, Warren gets the nomination and not Bernie. Right. If Warren gets the nomination and not Bernie. Right. Warren then has to work to and her campaign needs to work to bring the AOC people and the squad here. And me, and at the same time that you have now kind of passed the torch to a new generation of leaders to take over.
You're
the
cultivating surrogates either
exactly.
way.
Yeah.
For either side. And it's a good strategy because, yeah.
I was trying to figure out this one thing because, like, Elizabeth Warren released a video this week of she and Rashida Tlaib talking. I don't know if you saw it. Did you see this?
No, I didn't.
Well, and that was what got me thinking about this, because like so that seemed like a very conscious choice to saying that this is not kind of an either or here. So that's something to check out. Just real quick to wind things up here, because I know Sean's got to get going soon. We have crazy stuff happening with the Kurds in Syria. You've got crazy stuff happening once again with the impeachment stuff. That just looks like it's a train that is going at full speed. And we got to give the shout out to Elijah Cummins at the end of the segment because I'm sorry to say I didn't even realize he was that sick. I know he had a procedure, but I didn't realize it was that serious. And the guy has left down quite a legacy. And literally on his deathbed, right, on his hospice bed, one of the last things that he did before he passed was to sign two subpoenas of these immigration services to basically get these documents related to the detention of immigrant children and refugees. And that's amazing. So, rest in peace, Elijah Cummins, we'll be thinking about you as we kind of move forward. And as I've heard several people come on board and talking about it, who knew him very well, it says, he's the kind of person that would not want people to be sitting around in mourning. They want to be people who would standing up and fight. So take that for him. All right, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We will be back right after this quick break, but I want to remind you that you can become a member and support this podcast and support the work at Raging Chicken by going to patreon.com/RCPress today. Become a member, $5 a month. We'll be back right after this.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, and we're going all the way back to 1648. More than 100 years before the American Revolution, an early trade organization was founded in the colony of Massachusetts. They called themselves the Company of Shoemakers. Shoemakers were considered skilled craftsmen, yet changes in how shoes were made threatened their craft. The shoemakers were particularly concerned about low-skilled workers driving down wages. They formed their guild in an effort to protect their trade. This has been the basis for much of the trade union movement. The guild members argued that they were stopping, quote, the damage which the country sustains by occasion of bad wear. They wanted to set a quality standard for their industry. To ensure that standard, they set up an apprentice system by which new workers could learn their craft under the instruction of an established shoemaker. Nearly four centuries later, we hear similar declarations from union electricians, carpenters, and plumbers. Recognizing and promoting the professionalism and the skill of their craft is an important function for trade unions. Yet there were some differences between that early shoemaker's guild and today's labor movement. One of the most notable was the names for official duties in the guild. Instead of president or secretary treasurer, the shoemakers of Boston included titles such as a searcher, a warden, and a beadle. Another difference is that the Massachusetts colony outlawed the guild from, quote, fixing prices. so the guild could promote the quality of their work, but could not organize for specific wages. The skilled shoemakers were some of the earliest workers to organize together. Today's labor movement continues to walk in their shoes.
I'm walking. Yeah. As well be walking on the sun.
Walking on sunshine. Well, these boots are made for walking.
Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast as we turn to our PA focus. And Sean had spent some time in the Capitol this week. It was a star-studded event, from what I understand.
Yeah, fresh from hiking off the Appalachian Trail.
I mean, how many presidential candidates can say that? Come on.
Not too many. Mark Sanford's one, probably the only one. So Mark Sanford was in the Capitol this week. I did not really listen to a single word he said. We're going broke. The children don't know we're going broke tour. And pretty much like more stuff about like the Federal Reserve being $1 trillion in debt and stuff like that. But like,
so basically white noise.
Yeah.
He brought a special static din to the Capitol.
Static.
Yeah. That's Mark Sanford's campaign, everybody.
I mean, so like in the Capitol, there were more staffers. Like, there were more staffers in an empty fucking Capitol building that has not seen anything for about a month now there than reporters covering this.
Well, I think you heard that a little bit after one of his major applause lines when he was speaking. It went...
Well, so afterwards, like when he said, anyone have a question? And there was like 30 seconds of like silence. and so Justin Schweitzer, who, used to write for the Chicken and now works.
And was a former student of mine at Kutztown.
Yes, and works the PLS reporter in the Capitol, was asking him questions. And, we're trying to like be nice to him. So it was fun.
It's good that you can extend your heart out enough to feel pity on even someone like Mark Sanford.
I will say this. That camera lens I bought, I fucking love it.
Oh, man, you took some awesome pictures. Pictures.
I bought that lens for $150, and it should be like $300 used. And it's a nice sharp lens. One thing it's like, it's one of those like where the depth of field is so shallow when you're shooting at 1.8.
Yeah.
Where like the slightest movement of the person you're shooting is going to throw the focus out.
Right.
So like that's something I just have to get used to. But yeah, mm-hmm. So like that happened. It was hilarious. It was just a fun 15 minutes. It was worth the walk in the pouring rain to go to that.
There you go. So, I mean, I didn't even know that he was coming to town.
Did you know that?
Mm-hmm. I did.
I bet you didn't.
I didn't. Mark Sanford's coming to town.
Did you know that?
Mm-hmm. I did.
I bet you didn't.
And he's right. He's like, I really didn't know. And I don't think a lot of people knew.
A lot of people didn't know.
Well, it's a good thing. Well, the thing that became clear.
The shoes.
I mean, Mark Sanford, look, you got to give the guy a little credit. I mean, he's a hiker. He's not a plane taker. And he doesn't normally go through a whole bunch of kind of electronic surveillance things that basically looking at whether or not you're carrying weapons into a Capitol building. So he just, he didn't realize he needed to take off his shoes. Before going through the metal detector.
As someone commented, that was the first time they ever saw someone take off their shoes at a metal detector.
Well, he thought it was an airport. And he didn't realize. He thought he was getting back on his plane to go someplace else. But turns out that wasn't the case. So he took off his shoes and handed them over politely. It was very good. I like to see it. It was good.
Yeah.
Good old Mark Sanford makes his way to the Pennsylvania Capitol and Philadelphia, which I'm sure he got a warm reception there.
Yes, only one person showed up. Yeah, the journalist who wrote the story.
Exactly. And a small contingent of Argentinians. There you go.
I wonder if he's going to be like Trump and get the endorsement of his ex-wife.
Oh, that would be something. That would be something, wouldn't it? I don't think she has any interest at all in even like seeing him ever again. But you know.
You don't think so?
No, that was like.
I mean, going to Argentina is a pretty big, like, fucking.
But it wasn't just that. Look, look, look. Okay. Look, it wasn't just the scandal itself, right? It's that he refused it. His staff couldn't find him. Nobody knew where he was.
Oh, no. He went on the lam.
Yeah. Like
he
literally.
Went AWOL.
He
like
disappeared.
AWOL.
Nobody knew where he was. And he comes back. His wife can't reach him, right? They're calling her to find out where the hell he is. She's
where
like, I don't know. Right? And they find, and he comes back. And then his press conferences afterwards about where he was.
I remember this like going down. It was
He's
actually
like,
hilarious.
But I just fell in love. And I just, with my deepest heart. And I just fell in love. I've never met someone like that before in my life. And it's like, it took over my soul. You know, he was like, I mean, that's the kind of shit that he was saying on TV. And you imagine being his freaking wife at that point? The fact that the man is still walking around is testament to that woman's restraint. That's all I got to say. That's all I'm saying.
And then he became a congressman a couple years later.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, what the hell's going on with you, South Carolina? It's like, you know, it's like, whatever. Like, seriously. It's like, I loved her so much. He can't blame it for love. I mean, come on. I just spoke Spanish. Do you know how freaking romantic that is? You know, it's like, oh, my God. And so, you know, so he comes to Pennsylvania because he's got a shot, right? Oh, whatever. Okay. I don't know. He always, I guess he heard that, you know, that saying that, you know, you've got Philadelphia and Pittsburgh and you got Alabama in between. Maybe he thought like, okay, I guess that's where I'm going.
Well, supposedly like this was a coast to coast tour.
Coast to coast.
And he started in Philadelphia.
He started in Philadelphia. Exactly. Well, he's going from Philadelphia to Erie. That's his coast to coast. So he's got water near him on both sides, so he can make the claim that he was there. Crazy. But you also got. I mean, look, we have the GM strike that is just basically there's a tentative agreement, which is actually causing a lot of problems among actually rank and file members because apparently in the agreement it does not
get rid of the two tier system.
Well, and it's also allowing for the shutting down of three plants, right? So there were I was watching some of the local newscasts out in Michigan where you actually had after the big meeting there were some of the UAW folks that were coming out and they were heckling other members of the from other presidents of other locals who basically they were just saying, you know, you sold us out, right? But so this is gonna be really interesting how the vote goes. That's not got said and done, but meantime, right, the UAW is, you know, they can walk and chew gum, folks, right? Because here they are, the Mack Chuck workers, right down in, well, we've got one plant right in Allentown, right? How many plants are there in,
I don't know how many plants there are. I know there's one in McCungee,
right,
which is the Allentown plant. There's another one in Middletown, which is outside of Harrisburg.
Right.
And there's a couple more, I think, like in like Maryland. So this is like a regional,
right,
local.
So it's a Mid-Atlantic region, stuff like that. They are on strike now.
3,500 workers. And when I was home last weekend, I decided when I was coming back to Harrisburg on Monday, I left at like 5:30 in the morning. And instead of just getting on the turnpike from where I'm at, I actually took a 309 up through up to McCungee in that area. Like, for those on the – it's really easy to get to Allentown without having to get on the turnpike.
Right.
Like where I'm at in – you know, and also where you're at in Bucks and Montgomery County. So it was a pretty easy ride to get there. I'm talking to some of the people. It was actually pretty amazing. It was interesting. All the workers took off. Like, all the workers are on strike.
Mm-hmm.
All the floor workers, 100%.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were saying the office workers took the whole entire week off, knowing that the strike was going to happen.
Amazing coincidence, isn't it?
Yeah, who are not unionized and not part of the bargaining unit.
This is what you call freaking solidarity, folks, right here.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was just at that plant. I didn't get to the Middletown plant yet, but the strike started last Sunday. They're not going to get back to the bargaining table until at least the 21st. So this one may actually happen for a bit.
Yeah, this might go on. I know that we've got a contingent from our ABSCUF local at Kutztown that are going out to
Lehigh Valley DSA sent out a lot of people last Sunday. Yeah.
Yep. So I'm going to try to go out this weekend too as well, if because I think they went this morning and obviously we're doing this morning, and so I'm going to see if I can get out there with my camera and stuff At some point this weekend, or at the very least, if they're still on strike on Monday, which it looks like there probably will be, on my way to work, I'm going to swing by there. So there. But then also, kind of on there, now you also yesterday you had the Chicago Chicago teachers have gone on strike too as well. So this is like, if you remember, the Chicago teacher strike from several years back was basically the shot that launched a real kind of upsurge of militant labor organizing. This was before you had the West Virginia walkouts. This is before.
Imagine a future.
Sorry, everybody.
A future where those living with diabetes could leave.
My bad. I was pulling up an article and it had an autoplay. Sean can't hear that, but I know that you can. So this is a huge deal. So the Chicago teachers were really kind of front and center in getting this militancy kind of off and running. And now, once again, here we go, right? What's interesting about this is that there was just a new election. What's that? What do you got?
I don't really. Okay, so
he's not laughing at the Chicago teachers, everybody.
So I'm looking at my Twitter feed.
Uh-huh.
Oh, it's trending right now. Bed Bug Summit is trending.
Bed Bug Summit. That's freaking awesome.
And it's about bed bugs at Doral.
We're going to Doral. Bed Bug Summit, everybody. That's freaking awesome. You're going to globalize bed bugs. It's going to be awesome.
All right, you can continue.
Gee, thank you very much. I know that's I got to have your priorities, right? So there we go. But so yeah, so Chicago teachers out on strike. Yesterday there were thousands of people out in the loop of Chicago. Once again, seas of red of Chicago Teachers Union, CTU, amazing. You had SEIU also joining in that strike, joining in that rally in the downtown. This is amazing, right? So once again, Chicago teachers are doing, and there had just been a kind of mayoral election. Remember, there was Rahm Emanuel there before, and the new, I'm just spacing her name. She's the one who's just elected African-American woman, first African-American woman elected mayor of Chicago, and she is was considered to be more progressive than Rahm Emanuel. But again, this is like the example of a union that it's not saying, okay, look, this is not about like the credentials that the person in the office has. This has to be about the conditions, the working conditions here. So it doesn't matter who's sitting in that office, right? It doesn't matter if it's a moderate, it doesn't matter if it's a Republican, it doesn't matter if it's a progressive Democrat. It says, we are kind of doing the best thing by our schools. We're taking control of our working conditions, which is pretty freaking awesome.
So I guess I wanted to – so there's some stuff that's happening in Lebanon County.
Do tell.
And it's not the baloney.
It's not the baloney.
Well, there is a lot of baloney happening in Lebanon County right now.
We're going to Doral.
So, Lebanon County, Lebanon County, Mike Fulmer's seat.
Big breath, Sean. Big breath.
The disgraced former Pennsylvania State Senator Mike Fulmer, his open seat. There, they will be deciding who gets to fill it this weekend.
Wait, just to refresh my memory, what's happened with Mike Fulmer?
He got arrested for child pornography.
Oh yeah, that's right.
And he's probably spending the rest of his life in jail.
Oh yeah, that's right.
And he was such a libertarian that he handed over his cell phone to the cops and was and admitted guilt without a lawyer present.
There you go. We're going to Doral.
The parties, the Republican Party in this district is meeting this weekend in Lebanon County. There's like 15 conferees from Dauphin County that'll be picked, 10 or 15 from York that'll be picked, and then there's 41 conferees from York County Lebanon County that will decide who this is. So pretty much like the fix is in. This is going to be a Lebanon County native that's going to get this. And the person they're going to do this is who's going to most likely get it is David Arnold, who is district attorney. I've seen Arnold speak a couple times. He's conservative. He's not a douche. He probably is.
Hashtag not a douche.
so he probably has like really horrible views, and I will not agree with him at all. But like I've actually seen him like testify at some things, and he's not like he's not belligerent. Let's put it like that. Okay, so and The Capital Star published a really good story about how the fix is in for David Arnold. Mm-hmm. The county chair is this guy named Casey Long, who is related to someone named Mike Long. And Mike Long is the owner of Long and is one of the partners of Long and Nyquist.
Uh-huh.
And Casey Long works at and so Casey Long works there, uh-huh. and Drew Crompton's wife also works there, is a lobbyist with Long and Nyquist. Casey Long used to work for Senator Scarnati, which is who Drew Crompton works for.
My head's starting to hurt.
And so Casey Long is the head of the Lebanon County GOP, and there's a report that comes out where where Casey Long was pretty much strong arming potential conferees to pay $150 to go to these like chairman club events, like to meet like these special fundraisers. You pay $150 for this club mm-hmm. yearly fee.
Mm-hmm.
And you pretty much get like priority access to any fundraisers that happen, county dinners and stuff like that. So he's like, if you want to be a conferee to decide who is going to be the next state senator from Lebanon County, you have to put $150 into the Lebanon County coffers in order to gain that power.
Oh my God.
And
head bones connected to the neck bone.
So, of course, like people are fucking flipping out over this in Lebanon County. They're calling it the fix is in. It's a sham. But this is how free and fair elections work in Pennsylvania. I mean, this just shows you like the rank corruption that happens
yeah.
that really does not get reported upon when like these special elections happen. Because this is just as bad as like the Philly ward leaders. Like so much shit goes on. Like Philly gets a really bad name for the ward leaders being corrupt.
Which yeah, let's just be clear. It's a deserved. It's a deserved name, right? So yes. Let's not yes. say it's falsely. Okay, let's just be clear about that.
But you never hear stories about like these fucking county GOP parties that are just as like you know not as powerful like within the same scale,
right?
Of like the ward leaders in Philadelphia, but they're still just as powerful when it comes to picking these legislators, these lackeys who are going to fill these seats in a special election.
Yep. Well, and I've got to say, like,
and it also shows you like the corruption. I mean, it also is a really good, it highlights the corruption of central Pennsylvania.
Right.
Like central Pennsylvania is notoriously corrupt. We have our a lot of county commissioners, a lot of our county party chairs out here are lobbyists within Harrisburg, Harrisburg has one casino, but somehow we get the most gaming money
right.
out of anyone else in the state.
Right.
I'm in a waste management business. Everybody immediately assumes you're mobbed up. It's a stereotype, and it's offensive.
But yeah, like it's like people don't realize how corrupt central Pennsylvania politics is, especially on the county level, with all the incestuous backroom deals that are happening between the state and these county people who also work for the state in some capacity.
Right. And I also want to point out here, though, it's like what we also don't – we would not even know, like, the extent of this story, right, without the kind of reporting that came out with the Capitol, the Pennsylvania Capitol Star.
Yeah.
Right. So this is the flip side of that is that like the only thing that holds that you're able to have any kind of window into this requires kind of reporting on the ground that does this kind of stuff. And, you know, look, you know, with the gutting of newsrooms and things like this, you know, this is what's happening. So this is where the fact that the Pennsylvania Capital Star has kind of like started up and they're doing some of this reporting, you know, thank God for that, because this shows us how important it is.
Yeah, this is like a 1,500-word article
yeah.
on the stuff that's happening. And you could read it real quickly, and it's a really awesome read. Definitely recommend checking into that.
That's awesome. Well, and my little kind of a close out to this section here is that Chancellor Dan Greenstein was Chancellor Greenstein was at Kutztown's campus this week for the Posse Board of Governors meeting, because the Board of Governors, they like to kind of move around different campuses to check stuff out, right? And so they had it at Kutztown. And so he came to campus, and he met both with the union leadership, and our statewide president was there, and so on. But here, what was very interesting, a couple takeaways that I've heard. I was not there. I was teaching during both of the meetings, so I could not attend them. But the reports back that I got from people who were there was a couple things. Number one was that we found out that Kutztown has the most number of grievances than any campus in the state system. Right. His takeaway from that seemed to be that that we need to kind of like learn
you
how to get
fucking assholes.
Right. Yeah, exactly. We need to kind of get
Mahoney and Gambone.
Right, exactly. We need to get along more. Right. We got to stop all this stuff. Right. God forbid we find out that there's, I don't know, Legionnaire's disease in the freaking water. Which, by the way, we've got some reports going. We got acknowledgement from the university on this one, which is, things like this. I've got actually two calls that I have to return to as well, because I've now, since that's come out, and after we forced them with a right to know request in order to get this, it's like, now I got two. I come into work this week, and like, is this Kevin Mahoney? You can do this stuff on blah, this reporting. I've got some documents you might want to see. I'm like, all right, here we go. Right. And so the idea is that it's like, we're the problems, but the chancellor comes in, convinced. And, you know, again, not a whole lot of help from our statewide president, from my understanding, is that we had that we're the problem. Right. It's not the fact that they're not going to, you know, say the fix the frickin' mold in the buildings. Right. Or their freaking policies. Right. Or their kind of gutting of education. That's not the problem. The problem is that we're drawing attention to those things. Right. And I'll tell you right now, if anybody expects us to shut up, they can go kiss my mwah right there, because there's no way in hell until this stuff gets fixed and until it gets through this guy's head. But you know what? He comes there. He's got a big smile on his face. He's got that Silicon Valley charm. He's got real good hair. Right. And he's nice and he smiles a lot. So it wins people over. Right. And that's a shame. It's a shame. So, but the other thing they announced, they started announcing what this big Pashi transformation is. Right. And I haven't gone through everything that he said. But some of the stuff that he's pointing to is that you're having consolidation of like purchasing, for example, right? So the idea is that for paper purchasing and all this kind of stuff, in order to kind of save money. So you're a larger entity, you're purchasing things, you can drive down costs more. That's kind of the idea. I've had some personal experience with that too, as well. I'll save for another time. But what's interesting about that is that on the one hand, we could see, okay, consolidation of the services. On the flip side of that, it also has a stronger point of leverage, right? Because now, instead of just having a deal on a campus by campus basis with these different vendors, suddenly that becomes an opening like across the board when these contracts get renewed, right? Because all these vendors have to come and enter into contracts with universities, right? And they have to do this. So Greenstein says that they're getting some money, $100,000 to $300,000 from the state in order to kind of make some of this stuff happening. I don't know what that looks like right on the ground, but that's going to be very interesting moving forward. Put that aside. So anyways, we're going to bring this to a close. Sean is rapidly running out of time. He's got to get out of here. So we're going to take a quick break and come back with this week's Let's Go.
This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. For the past 7 years, Raging Chicken Press has brought pull-no-punches, progressive reporting and commentary to the interwebs. Our long-form investigative pieces, stories that no access journalist wants to touch, or rollicking weekly podcasts strive to advance progressive movements and perspectives rooted in the struggles happening across the country or down the street. We've broken national stories and caused our share of discomfort in the halls of power. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. And you can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Best way you can do that is to become a member of Raging Chicken today by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Thank you for your energy, your encouragement, and your support. Keep up the fight.
Yes, everybody, it's the return of space news. Just got the couple quick things, like I said, that today is a moment in history that we could look at some space news. We got two women astronauts made history by being the first ever all-female spacewalk. And this is from space.com. Quote, the spacewalking duo who trained together in the same astronaut class aren't just colleagues, they're best friends, too. And today they're making history together as they work outside the orbiting laboratory on an unplanned spacewalk to repair a battery charge discharge unit on one of the solar arrays that failed after Koch and NASA astronaut Nick Hague replaced the battery during a spacewalk on October 11th. That October 11th one, or actually not the October 11th, there was one earlier one that was supposed to be the first all-female one, but like I said in the beginning, the introduction today is that they didn't have enough spacesuits that would fit them. So that's become this kind of issue of kind of looking around, and it's been really fascinating to see NASA respond to that. They also, NASA trotted out its kind of new space spacesuits that are being designed for both kind of deep space exploration and the kind of the lunar program. It looks like they're getting serious about this stuff. Is that they got these spacesuits, they're red, white, and blue, and they brought out a woman in the spacesuit so that this would be the first woman on the moon. So, and making sure that there's enough spacesuits for kind of accommodate both men and women. So that was also kind of interesting to see coming out of the NASA this week. And Virgin Galactic, yes, once again, they've partnered up, right, for the private space travelers with Under Armour, because of course they did. So there you have it, folks. Lots of other stuff going on. Today was actually the anniversary of the first cat in space, right, back in 1950-something or other, which is kind of cool. The Catstronaut, as they called her. There you have it. But so I just want to give you a Free Will update, and I know I'm rushing a little bit, but I know Sean's got some place to be. So Free Will's releases this weekend. You've got a cranberry wheat. They took their base wheat ale, and they basically took their base wheat ale and fermented it with cranberries to create a beer designed to last you through the colder months of the year. I'm reading directly from their site. Is a nuanced aroma, flavor of cranberry to reflect the season, right? And that comes in at a kind of nice, even 5% ABV. They're also coming in with their first collaboration with Dewclaw Brewing and Is a Beer Carb, and it's called Universally United. Universally United is a hazy IPA with pomegranate. It's brewed with flaked oats and flaked corn, hopped with experimental 06277, Idaho 7, and Amarillo, then fermented with pomegranate puree. Fruit-forward, juicy notes of pomegranate, peach, and strawberry comes in at 7.1 ABV. I'm looking forward to getting that. And I'm definitely going to go up and get that Universal United one. I'm very much looking forward to that, especially because I'll just let everybody know that I'm going to get extra beer tomorrow because tomorrow is my birthday. That's right. I'm hitting the big 5-0, mofos.
I didn't even realize that.
Can you believe that? Yes, it is. And you know what I'm going to be doing? I'm going to be building a deck. So that's going to be nice. We'll go out to dinner and things like this. But for me, it's just kind of like another day. I always like my birthday, but, you know, whatever, 5-0, schmo, 5-schmo, whatever. Back to build the deck. Get back to work, mofo. That's what it's going to be. So anything else for the good of the order, Sean?
Not a whole lot going on this weekend. Don't really know. Yeah, I don't have anything planned. They returned a session on this week, and then I just got a tweet that that Mastriano, Doug Mastriano, mm-hmm. and Stephanie Porowitz, two white nationalists in our legislature, are going to be introducing the six-week abortion ban.
Good. Here we go again.
Culture war time.
Yeah, exactly. When you got nothing else, is where you go, right? Yeah. I should mention, though, last week Sean got to meet his nephew. For the first time. So that's a pretty freaking awesome thing.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. No, that was fun.
We're just going to call you the favorite uncle from now on. How's that?
Yes, that's exactly right.
All right, man. Sorry.
Funny thing is, like, week before, my niece was up here with my mom and dad, and I gave my niece a cookie, right? And as soon as I, like, as soon as she heard I was coming home, said, "Is Uncle Sean bringing me cookie?" Oh,
that's awesome.
Where, did I get my cookie?
All right, so here's this is just a little tiny like piece of advice, right? So every time you go home, you're going to see her. Make sure you bring her a cookie from.
Oh, like, I know. Now I have to.
Yeah, because it'll be like seriously that kind of stuff. That those little kind of traditions like mean the freaking world to kids. So you're on the train, man.
Yep.
All right. Well, hey, I know you got to get out of here, so we're going to cut this one out here. Remind everybody that if you want to help support the work that we're doing on this podcast. Oh, and I should say that I'm going to have an interview coming up with a Students for Bernie group that is established at Kutztown. They've been doing some really amazing work. They've been doing kind of phone banking. They've been doing some organizing on campus, and so we're going to bring on some of the student leaders of that too. And we have, I don't know if we're going to do it as a segment of our normal podcast or if it's going to be as an additional one that will be available through the same stream, but I'll kind of let you know. I just want to put that on your agenda. So this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We want to remind you to go to patreon.com/RC Press to become a member for as little as $5 a month. We appreciate all the support. But for now, we're going to get out of here, head out into the world, and kind of brace ourselves against another week of insanity. We'll talk to you, everybody.
See ya!
Sanders, do you want to respond?
I get a little bit tired, I must say. Are people defending a system which is dysfunctional, which is cruel? 87 million uninsured, 30,000 people dying every single year, 500,000 people going bankrupt. For what reason? They came down with cancer. I will tell you what the issue is here. The issue is whether the Democratic Party has the guts to stand up to the healthcare industry, which made $100 billion in profit, whether we have the guts to stand up to the corrupt, price-fixing pharmaceutical industry, which is charging us the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs. And if we don't have the guts to do that, if all we can do is take their money, we should be ashamed of ourselves.
Thank you.